Welcome to the Tactical Security Podcast.
Welcome to Tactical Security, where we discuss cybersecurity practices from a technical and managerial standpoint. Here's what you need to know about today's security tactics.
This is episode 9. During this episode, we'll be discussing phishing. Phishing awareness training value versus abandoning the practice altogether.
I'm Wolf, and I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
So Dave, right off the bat, let's acknowledge that phishing can be fun. I've got a lot of stories on this. I'm sure you have a few. One of my favorites was we were doing a security assessment, both technical and controls, policy, procedures, those sort of things. So we're in the conference room. We're in the conference room with the CISO and with his team. And all of a sudden, like, the bat phone rings and they're like, we need to go. And they run out of the room. And I'm like, well, that's weird. And so afterwards, I pulled the CISO aside. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, well, you know that phishing test that you guys include? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He goes, well, you know how you guys wrote it about HR? I'm like, yeah, it was a good one. It was a good pretext. It's like, oh, HR cares about you. Please give us your guidance. Please give us your tips. I'm like, yeah, it was a good one. He goes, yeah, well, apparently the CEO read that and thought he kind of remembered the head of HR saying something about collecting user feedback and included that in his all hands email saying, the company's doing great. Here's some highlights. Oh, by the way, before the end of the day, I want you to take this survey.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes. Needless to say, we got like 90% of the company's creds.
So, I you know, from a phishing, you know, internal phishing practice and kind of user awareness standpoint, that would be a definite phishing fail.
It would, because here's the thing. I think phishing is one of those things that's fun conceptually. It gets hackers excited. It's great to share these stories, but it really is it's a firework, right? You're holding a firework and you're hoping that when it explodes, it's pretty. But if you hold on too long and it explodes, it's in your hand and now you're dealing with shrapnel. And in this case, the CEO, when he found out what happened, it was not pretty.
Well, I mean, putting myself in the CEO's shoes, it's like you just embarrassed yourself in front of the entire company. Because not only did you fall for the phishing attack, you enlisted, what'd you say, 92%?
About that, yes. Yeah,
92%. So now the fish has gone from something that was spearfish to the CEO, and I don't know how many other people might have received it, but what do people typically do when senior level executives send out, you know, hey, do this survey, hey, we want you to watch this video, hey, participate in this thing? They're going to do it. Like, again, the majority of them are going to do it. A, they want to be good corporate citizens. B, they suspect their employers are observing who's clicking and who's not clicking. And you know, generally there's some kind of, I don't want to say like a consequence, but there's just the known fact that you're being monitored. And the fear of not being in that cohort who didn't respond, right? You don't want to. You want to be that good corporate citizen. So, how did you guys recover from that?
Well, from a security consultant perspective, we did a great job, right? It was so convincing. In retrospect, I would never do that again. And as my career has progressed, I become less and less in support of phishing exercises. Because in this case, you know, the CEO came down hard on that CISO. And if you think he's sitting there going, oh, wow, we did a great job hiring this consulting team, you would be wrong.
Well, you guys got fired.
We didn't get fired, but we definitely weren't brought back.
What the heck is the difference? I get you. I mean, I guess maybe if you're fired, you might not get paid or something, but we don't need to get into those level of minutia. But, you know, this kind of brings me to my side of the argument. I mean, before I even get to that part, think about it, right? Think about phishing. Think about all the other different things in security, how complex they are, you know, MFA or 2FA or ACLs and data classification and declassification and encryption. Forget about encryption. There's so many different algorithms, and some of them are great and some of them suck, and some of them only have a short-lived life until quantum computing becomes a common practice. But with phishing, right, it's super simple. What is the solution? I hate to put you on the spot, but what is the solution to phishing?
Passwordless. Devalue the credentials. Let me.
I think it's simpler than that. And I want to hear what you have to say about devalue the credentials and passwordless. And please clearly define that, because I, you know, there's some misconceptions that passwordless means actually there is no password, which is a myth. But my solution, and I think it should be the solution for everybody, you can call out and tell me otherwise if you like, but I think the solution to phishing is just don't click the link.
But what?
Don't click the link. If you get the phishing attack and you're properly trained and you don't fall for it, or you kind of suspect a little bit that, wait, this seems a little kind of out of the norm. My spidey senses are tingling. I'm not going to click the link. And you're now going to argue that.
Yes.
Good.
I'm going to argue it twofold. First, I'm going to argue it based on not clicking links. Second, I'm going to argue it based on if you're a security aware person. So let's first take not click the link. We built the internet to click links. The whole point of this thing is to click links, to go to pages, to interact with things, to share information. How many legitimate emails do we get a day where you got to click on something? 100? 500? 1,000?
I don't get that many. No, I don't get that many, but
I get at least 100.
Well, yeah, you got a completely different role than I do. And I think mine is more typical of the average worker. Because, you know, you're a strategist and you're dealing with the company globally, right? I'm dealing with a more regional area. But you, yes and no, right? Yes, the whole purpose of the internet is to go out and get more content, get information, participate, right? But that is the reason why the crooks are able to take advantage of people. And I'm not saying, are we going to ever reach 100% don't click the link? I mean, ideal. But what is most phishing attacks, right? The exercises typically have a 7-8% click-through rate, correct?
Oh, much higher than that.
Much higher. Oh, Jesus.
Generally 30-40.
Wow. I've heard other companies at conferences, not going to name conferences.
They were lying.
Not going to name companies, but their numbers and their environment was around 7 and 8, and
they were lying.
They were lying.
Historically, the trend used to be around 60%, and it dipped under 50% in around 2018 or so, and it's been trending around 30-40% for the tests that I've been involved in, the stats I've seen. Now, if your job is not to click links, well, okay, maybe you're a little bit better. But if your job is to process invoices, if your job is to interact with people, if you know, if you're getting a document off of SharePoint or Google Docs, there's links and links. And if you go to reset your password, there's more links. The internet was made for clicking.
Okay, so yeah, but you had a good security awareness point, and I believe that part of my solution is really related to that security awareness point, where I get a bunch of emails from different people within different groups and departments, and you know, a lot of them are like this survey and this information, this video, and there's tools out there that are used within like Discord and Slack and other places that if you click the link, they're going to collect your browser information, your IP address, you know, your egress IP address and all this other stuff, and then use it to intimidate you or potentially DOS your IP if they're in a, like, you know, a gaming situation. And this kind of happens with some pro gamers when there's money on the table, they'll get attacked somehow. Somebody will figure out their IP and it's usually link related. But it's so mm-hmm. well hidden and it's a redirect, right? You click the link. You look like it's yeah. going to some video that you might be interested in. The server that actually receives your request and then redirects it to the proper content collects all that data. And it's very simple. It's a simple, very simple attack. But that's kind of my point, is if you don't, I'm going to retract it a little bit. I'm not going to say don't click the link, but before you click the link, get a little bit of understanding on how to vet it. All right. So case in point. Okay, good. So that is the security awareness part. Case in point, the gaming Discord server I'm on. Bunch of middle school kids, some high school kids, and a bunch of adults are on there. And the kids are like, oh, go to redeem.playvalorant.com. So right away, I'm very skeptical. Like, wait. And you have a code? This is just looking too good to be true. So that whole concept of too good to be true, take it for really what it is. It's usually somebody else is gaining something from you doing something, right? If it looks like it's free, it really isn't. And what do I do? I go into investigate and I plop in the URL and it comes back with a medium risk score of 42%. All right. And then I look and there's like, whoa, there's a whole history of malware that used to be. In fact, I didn't use the redeem part. I just did the playvalorant.com. A whole history of malware that used to be hosted there. And the latest piece of malware had an 85% or 85 risk score. So the kids or the youths who don't have this security awareness training are all about, yeah, I want this too. Where I'm like, and I wrote it up and I said, guys, and I kind of told them what I just said, but you really want to be careful not to do this. Or if you do this, please go and change your password because somebody is collecting information on you.
Because you knew what you were doing and you took the time to figure it out.
Correct. And I guess that's part of my argument. And I don't expect everybody to be a security professional, but in the world that we live in today, I almost compare this, and you're going to argue it, almost compare it to riding a bicycle, right? You don't need a license to ride a bicycle. Anybody can learn how to do it, but there's just certain things you're not going to do. Like you don't cross on the green. You don't cross in between. You want to wear a helmet. You don't have to wear a helmet, but it's good to. And I really think we need to have some of these like fishing helmets somehow. I don't know how, you know, it's a weird visual, but you know, some way to protect people and they could protect themselves better.
I'm not opposed to teaching people to protect themselves better. I do think we need to be cognizant of the fact, and this was my second point. My first point was the internet's made for clicking, and I stand by that. And the second point is I will acknowledge that we need to teach people, you know, basic safety around what they're clicking on. My second point is that, to your bike analogy, even if you're riding along and you have a helmet and you're following all the rules, that doesn't mean a car is not going to run into you. That doesn't mean accidents won't happen. I'll give you an example recently. Oh, this was good, Dave. This, whoever did this to me was really, really smart. I've got MFA, SMS, unfortunately, MFA enabled on my Insta account. So I get an SMS push to my Insta. Like, that's weird. And then I get a link sent to my via SMS. Oh, there's an issue with your account. Please click here so that you can retrieve your account. I'm like, aha, that's suspicious. And yeah. I look it up and sure enough, it's a well-known attack going on right now. Yep. I'm like, ha, I'm so clever. I'm so smart. You didn't catch me. A half hour later, I get an email and this email looked perfect. Perfect. Did you just log into your Insta account? Because we noticed someone coming in from Poland on Windows, running Firefox, who logged into Insta. Click here. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm not in Poland and I'm not running Windows and I'm not running Firefox. So I click the link. I'm like, what's going on? Now you may be thinking, Wolf, why did you do that? It made sense that maybe someone had gotten into my account and I needed to retrieve it. And the email again looked perfect. It was the new device email that Insta sends. Now, what saved me? What saved me was, we're running Umbrella. And the minute I clicked the link, Umbrella was like, you're an idiot. Don't do that. So out of nowhere, I drove into traffic in my bike, all happy, you know, with my little bike bell that I'm digging in my helmet. And I drove into traffic and an Umbrella swooped down and pulled me before the car hit me. But my point is that if I can fall for it, if I can fall for it, and I would argue that just about anyone can, and people are going to make mistakes.
Well, the one thing that I would have done different in that, and I'm now likening, I'm taking the analogy that we've been using with the bike riding and getting hit by a car, is you were riding your bike looking at your cell phone, and then you got hit by a car because you went into traffic. So I'm kind of building on that. Sorry. But my point here is, if the user, and forget that, you know, they're Wolfgang Gorlick, let's just pretend they're just average user. And if they got that, yeah, they're going to react the same way you did. But if they can, they could say, well, you know, maybe they've taken this attack, this fish, one step further. Well, I'm going to do that too. And what I'm going to do is I want to look at the header information in the email. Now, before you say, whoa, you're getting way too technical. It's a simple thing that if you gotta look at the different relays or the host name, right? So people know how to read host names. You go to www.google.com, that's a host name. But if you know that you're supposed to be getting an email from Insta, but the domain that that email is coming from in that header, in that trail where the email started from and may have gotten relayed and then it kind of reached your inbox, if you look at that and say, wait a minute, this is not an Insta domain, or this is a domain that's not Insta, but it's an L to look like a capital I, or it's a one, or it's something a little different. Then they can say, oh, wait a minute, now this is an attack on me and I'm not going to click the link. And I know you're going to argue not everybody can do that, and that's absolutely true. But I really believe this is kind of like the safety helmet that people need to put on, or maybe the knee pads or the elbow pads.
It is a good advice to know how to do these things. But on the other hand, we should let the machines do them for us. Why not just have technology stop and protect you, like what happened in my case? And looking at header information is not that easy if you're using something like Gmail or Webmail. A lot of that is not accessible through the standard interface. So I don't know that I agree with you, but putting that aside for a minute, back to phishing simulations and why I think they're stupid. I would rather me, Wolfgang Gorlick, learn the lesson of, oh, what did I just do? And be angry at the attackers than have an employee angry at a security professional or security team. Or worse, have the CEO angry. You know, there's a number of times over the pandemic that this happened, right? There was, I remember there was the one where a company you and I both know went and executed a pretext on a hospital for PPE to saying, hey, if you give us our username and password, we will expedite your PPE. And of course, nurses fell for it. Yep. Why would you do that? Early access to vaccines. Why would you do that? And then there was one recently for train engineers and conductors where they sent out to the train line a phishing pretext saying, look, we got your back. We really appreciate you. You are, you know, frontline workers. Click here to sign up for the frontline bonus. And so here there's people who are going through a pandemic who are not working, you know, exorbitant, well-paid jobs to begin with. Think they're going to get a bonus, and everyone who fell for it got written up. None of those scenarios are creating a culture where the employees are going to respect and engage with the security team. And so my broader point is, phishing is terrible. There's a lot of things we can do about it, but I think the idea of phishing simulation is incredibly dangerous and risky because it drives a wedge between the security team and the employee.
So I get what you're saying, and I don't completely disagree with it. When you went through this, a lot of things kind of went through my mind, and I don't really think we have enough time to kind of explore all of them. But one of the things kind of like, okay, so if we're not going to send, or we're not going to do like internal phishing campaigns, right, and try to send these messages and trick people, what do we do instead? And you were really describing scenarios where the criminals take advantage of catastrophic events or, you know, celebrity drama or things like that. You know, I'm going to go way back in time. Michael Jackson dies, tons and tons of hybrid spam mail virus kind of campaigns, SEO poisoning was running rampant. And if we could at least teach people that when there is something like a pandemic or something happening that is really newsworthy, these fishing hole type attacks are going to be taken advantage of, right? So they're going to use people wanting to get more information or wanting to get a bonus or just wanting to get PPE, which is in, you know, dramatic shortage at the time. You know, they're going to take advantage of that. And people, if we could teach them, be on the lookout for anything that might be related. Now, we can't be specific because we don't know exactly what the attackers are going to do until they do it. But if people could at least kind of get a warning, right? A warning email with no links from security, you know, get your guard up, be on high alert, right? Kind of like DEFCON, right? There's DEFCON levels. We're at DEFCON 3, DEFCON 4. You click the link, DEFCON 5. And let them know that something's going to happen. We don't know when, we don't know how, but just be more cautious. What do you think of that? And if you see something you don't know, forward it to fish at company email domain. Yeah. And let the experts then take the next step.
Yeah.
And say, you know what? Thanks for sending. We did find something. We're going to let everybody know about this phishing campaign. Plus, we're going to update the technology so it is aware. Because my argument with the technology, even though we both make a living from it, is there's a gap. There's a window gap. And I've seen this happen in real time, where if there's a brand new phishing campaign and it's like a PDF document loaded up somewhere in like Azure in the cloud, and that document is there in the cloud and the link is in the email, and that user clicks the link, from the time that the researchers know that this is a genuine, valid, vetted campaign, it could, and then put out the updates to block it, it could be a half a day or more. And by then the damage is done.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. There is always the lag, and the tactics are always changing. One of my favorite examples of that was we saw the trend of moving malcode from emails into zip files, right? Oh, please see the attached zip file, because for a while scanners wouldn't read zip files.
Right.
So people are like, all right, no problem. I would just block zip files. So once I think the number was around 30%. Once around 30% of the people were blocking zip files, around that time, Windows came out with the auto mount feature for ISO files. And suddenly all the phishing were ISOs. And again, the company scrambled and they put in place a rule to block ISO files. And again, once that number climbed up 20, 30%, and the phishing weren't being accessible or successful, the adversary switched to sending IMG files, which for those of you who don't know, is effectively ISO is for a CD, IMG is for a floppy. But in both cases, they auto mount and they're effectively a zip structure. And so for quite a while, adversaries were able to use different file formats until the controls caught up. And that's just on a very macro level. I just collapsed 5 years of history of phishing. So there certainly is going to be an adaptation of tactics. And more locally, there's going to be, hey, a new IP address or a new domain or a new PDF signature that the first X number of people who catch it are not going to be protected by things like Umbrella or antivirus or whatnot. Yeah. Totally, completely agree.
Or email security.
Yeah. Or email security. That's the nature of signature-based defenses. And you won't get any argument with me. I understand that. My whole point is, if we're going to do security awareness training, which, by the way, doesn't work very well. Anyways, a study I read in 2020 from the ISF said that less than 15% of users actually change their behavior after security awareness. Teeny tiny percentage, right? Doesn't work that well anyways. But if we're going to do awareness training, let's do it with real fishes. Let's have the person who just got fished explain it to their peers. Let's have the fish that we narrowly avoided, you know, let's have that in the PowerPoint. Let's have real world examples, and let's look at the criminals and be very frustrated what they're doing. Let's not become the bad guys ourselves in an effort to chase lulls or to chase glory.
I agree with that latter statement. You know, be angry at the bad guys. They're the reason why we're doing this, but also kind of we have to thank them because it's helped us create a pretty nice career. I mean, you know, let's be truthful. But my other part of my argument is if we're going to live in a society that's driven by technology, whether it's consumer or enterprise, what have you, people need to make the effort to become more technology or technologically adept. And it's on them. The burden of self-education or training, or some people argue training versus education, one's better than the other. It really doesn't matter. That is really on the end user. Why? Well, it goes back to the bicycle, right? You got to learn how to do hand signals when you ride a bike. You know, you've got to learn the balance. You've got to learn the mechanics of pedaling and braking and hand brakes versus foot brake. You have to learn that stuff, right? Because otherwise you can't use the bike. But there are people who use technology and they're like, well, I don't really care how it works. I just want it to work. And those are the ones that are in that 30, 40% that fall victim. And those are probably, you know, the not in the 15% who are going to change their behavior. But they really need to, otherwise they're going to just continue giving up their information, giving up or downloading ransomware and having to pay the ransoms. And, you know, that's how this stuff happens. You know, there was a pipeline issue and now there's a food issue, and they're going to continue attacking these basic necessities that we've become very dependent upon because they know people are falling for it. And once these tactics, or once the people stop falling for it, they're going to change their tactics. And I'm going to use this analogy, and I think we've done it in another podcast, where as long as people stop buying stolen car radios, the thieves will stop stealing car radios. They'll steal something else, but don't help create the market. And that's kind of really my point.
I agree with you. Let's all build, you know, better street awareness, better bicycle skills to keep going on with this analogy. At the same time, though, let's build better bikes. Let's build better roads. Okay. There was a really interesting project done in Norway, and I don't speak Norwegian, so I won't attempt it, but there was a term for it, which effectively meant zero deaths. And they restructured the widths of the roads. They put in place like rumble strips. They put in place areas where no one could drive. And in addition to everything you just laid out, they made the environment more conducive to the human mind. What happens when you're tired, when you're not paying attention, when you're distracted, when you're irritable? Well, without some environmental tolerances built in, you drive into traffic. With some environmental tolerances built in, the environment itself can protect you in those cases. So while I agree with you, I stand firm in saying that you know, our role in the next 20 years, hopefully, is to help build technology that does a better job at protecting people.
I do agree with that last statement. And I do like that Norwegian example. I think that's pretty interesting. And yeah, I mean, self-healing systems, and we can always kind of get into all that other stuff. But you mentioned passwordless earlier. And before we run out of time, I really would love for you to explain what passwordless is for anybody who's heard of it, but they really don't quite get it or don't understand it. And then what the value is, right? And how this could become the potential, the future potential countermeasure to things like phishing.
So with any attack, you do a threat model. Here's the tactics the criminal is going to take. And then along that threat model, for each tactic, you want to put in place preventative, detective, and recovery controls. In addition, you look at where the adversary is going. What is it that they're trying to do, right? What is the car stereo they're trying to steal? If you can get rid of the lure, the car stereo, you can prevent the whole chain. So a lot of our conversation has been around this threat model of an adversary who's phishing, trying to get your credentials, talking about better user education, technical controls. That's all along that path the adversary is taking from the time they send an email to the time they harvest your credentials. Why that works is because credentials are valuable. Account takeover is valuable. I read that in 2020, the business email compromise averaged more than a bank robbery. They want to steal your email. They want in. And the way they do that is by tricking you to give them the password. Now, if we can move to a passwordless authentication model, which is authenticating with a factor other than a password. Usually that's a protocol called FIDO2, but again, we don't have a lot of time to dig into it, but a stronger factor, right? A hardware token, a security token, a certificate on your device, something you access through through biometrics. If we can get to a stronger factor of authentication, when we click on links, it's not going to just hand over that cred. And even if it did, it would be useless for the adversary to use it because it's you know, the public key. It's not the private key. The reason why I bring up passwordless is I think as the industry moves away from a shared secret, moves away from using a set of string to authenticate into the environment, the point of phishing for credentials is going to go away. Now, they're going to go at us other ways. The criminals are not about to stop. But I do think that getting rid of the lure will get rid of the problem.
I can see that. I can see that. And you're right. They're just going to change their TTPs, or they're going to come up with another way to try and get at the money. And I think, gosh, can't remember where I heard it, but I heard on some webinar that cybercrime has got like the third largest GNP in the world.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a huge economy that I hate to call it even that, but that's a huge economy. How much is that actually supporting other economies? And if that economy even was reduced by half, what is the impact to other markets that are reliant on the purchases that might come from that? Now, I'm not talking about like other criminal purchases, but just automobile, jewelry, gold, whatever, cryptocurrency. You know, they're putting the money somewhere, right? And that money is necessary. It's kind of, again, you know, part of the whole ecosystem, but I'm more like, I'd like it to go away because it's all blood money, you know, it's dirty money, but it you know, there could be such an adverse impact. I mean, over time, like you mentioned 20 years and, you know, I think roughly speaking 20 years in economic terms is really not that long of a period. And if over the next 20 to 50 years, if we can start reducing that GNP down with something like passwordless, I'm all for it. And I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, because there is a password, right? There's still a password. But if that password's not kitten one, but it's something, you know, really long and complicated, even if a user's phished, they're going to be like, I don't know what the hell the password is. It got generated for me by some algorithm. And you know, there was a salt. And I don't know. I just know that I clicked a few buttons, it generated a password, and now I just use my biometrics to get in or my phone. So they, even if they get that link, then the password's useless. It's not going to work. They can't enter it, right? Right?
Absolutely agree. But now we're talking 20 years in the future, and I do want to bring it back to the topic du jour, which was phishing. So on this conversation, we talked about different ways to train users. We talked about the need to build up a degree of street smarts. We talked about the damage that a poorly conceived phish can do within the organization to trust both of your leadership and your employees. And we talked about the need for technical controls. I will put out one plug. If someone wants to share with me their lessons of going away from phishing simulation, I am very eager to hear. I'm actually working on a little bit of a skunks project of best practices for not phishing your users. But Dave, I think this was a really good conversation.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. And I really hope everyone that's listening finds this to be valuable, and definitely share it with other people that you know, who you feel can also benefit from you know, our experiences and knowledge in this area and any other part of the podcast as well. So I'm going to close it here. So thanks, Wolf. I really do appreciate everything that you contributed and shared today. This has been Tactical Security with Wolf and Dave. Please join us for future episodes where we will dig into other tactical tools and practices. Stay healthy, everyone. Question truth and be better.